Woohoo!
Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday!
It's Tuesday!
And I feel like it's been 2 weeks since we last recorded on a Tuesday.
2 weeks? Why has it been so long?
Well, for one, it's been like endless Halloween around here. I feel like we've had a new costume every day, which is the best. And two, because it was daylight savings time.
Yeah.
And when you add an hour to a day, it feels like you're adding eternity.
It was wild yesterday. We got to 4 p.m. and I was like, I should have been asleep already. 1 hour is somehow equivalent to 10 hours, and I don't know how.
Yeah, I love feeling like time is extended out, and it's like we're living these really long days. But at 3 p.m., I was like, it's got to be dinner time. And by 5 p.m., I was like, it's bedtime. Like, it's for sure bedtime.
Yeah, it kind of felt like I imagined chronic depression feels for some reason. Yeah. We're just like, I don't really want to go on. All I want is dinner and sleep right now.
It seemed like forever. Yeah. And Leo, I feel like Leo's been adjusting to it great. He's been going to bed at like 7 and waking up at 7. Meanwhile, I'm up at 4 and I'm like, what's going on? I am so ready to start my day.
You're the big baby of the family is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it's true. I feel like I get us sick. I wake us up early. Like nothing, babies are supposed to be hard and I'm the one that's bringing the challenges over here.
Babies are beautiful. They're full of hope and life. And that's what you bring to the family. Meanwhile, our actual baby is just a 70-year-old in a 1-year-old's body.
That's very true. Yeah, the only time I like daylight savings is like at 4 a.m. and that probably only lasts until 8 a.m. And then I'm like, everything else just brings us to bedtime.
Yeah, that's where I've really become a grump in my old age. Because every time the clock switch, I used to be like, oh, well, it's cool. It changes things. Or at least one of them is okay. And now I'm like, both suck. One, like the one that happens in spring, makes people get like heart attacks. This one makes people experience chronic depression on a really small scale.
Yeah, both are really bad. Also, I feel like it's very confusing to you too, because I mean, you're brilliant. I feel like the podcast listeners have seen that. Like you almost got a perfect score on your SAT. But for whatever reason, you get endlessly confused by the time chains and which direction it's supposed to go.
Yeah, it's like spring forward, fall back. It's like, I don't know what either of those mean, motherfuckers. You just do it for me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, my clocks are going to change and just don't tell me it happened and I should be okay. I'll just wake up one morning and be like, oh, it's a little darker now. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I wonder what would happen if we just did that.
That's what I need because for some reason it just does not compute in my brain.
But it's a perfect week. I feel like surrounding Halloween into daylight savings is perfect because we've been having so much fun on Halloween week. Like I feel like here in Boulder, all the Halloween festivities started before 5 p.m., which is a parent's dream and clearly our dream. And like, there was a 2-year-old dressed as Wout Van Aert. And I feel like if there's a Boulder summary statement, it's that.
Yeah, I made a joke on my Strava about Leo, our baby, he was naked on his bike and that he went to Halloween as sexy Wout Van Aert. Just thinking, oh, you know, he's on a bike, he's naked, sexy bike rider. Literally that night, we saw a trick-or-treater in Jumbo Visma outfit, so Wout Van Aert's team, riding his little Strider bike. And I'm like, okay, Boulder, now you're just too much of the stereotype.
Well, we assumed it was Wout Van Aert. It could have been Jonas Vingegaard. There was like no discerning characteristics as to whether it was Wout or Jonas. But actually, Leo has been riding one-handed. And I feel like he's coming for Jonas Vingegaard because Jonas is so bad at like bike handling, whether it's like whether he's going one hand or no hand. And Leo's coming for him.
Yeah, Leo is coming for you, Jonas. That is the conclusion of this intro.
Did you see a favorite Halloween costume while you're out there? There was like many hundreds of kids. We went to Pearl Street here in Boulder and it was like Halloween costumes galore.
Okay, all the Disney costumes really got me. There was a mom dressed up as Mirabelle from Encanto and it almost made me break out in song. So I'm going to go that. I used to be all about the sexy costumes. Now I'm about the Disney. What has happened to my fucking life, Megan?
I love that. No, that's great. I truly respect and uplift that.
Okay, did you have a favorite one?
Yeah. Okay, so the ones where kids are like giant blobs. So you know like the inflatable Halloween costumes?
Yeah.
And I think they're my favorite because that would have been my dream as a kid. Do you know how antisocial you can be when you're dressed just inside a blob and like no one can talk to you? It's great.
Yeah, it's like masquerade parties, you know, where you put things over your eyes.
Yes.
What I always understood the rationale for those was back in the sexually repressed time, in the 1700s and 1800s, is because people could be less inhibited when they had this on. Similarly, we as introverts could just go out in big inflatable T-Rex costumes and not feel so awkward.
Yeah, or they have ones that like fully cover the face. Do how great would that be? But actually, even better, I wonder if they make them for two. We could just do that together, hang out, go trick-or-treating. It would be great.
They have tandem bicycling. We could do tandem Halloween costume technical running downhill.
In an inflatable marshmallow
Wouldn't
suit.
Wouldn't that be perfect?
It would be great.
We could break Killian records if we just go boop, 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 in our T-Rex costume.
One of my friend's kids actually went as a T-Rex and someone stepped on his tail in the inflatable costume. Yeah. And there's no, so in the T-Rex costume, your arms are not free. And this poor guy smashed his face. Because if you think about it, he couldn't like catch himself on the way down. So absolutely wrecked his face, which made me rethink our like swap T-Rex idea.
Is it okay that I laughed at that?
Oh, it's totally okay.
Okay, we don't
the
have
kids,
to edit
the kids
out.
Okay, yes. Kids okay. Yeah, kid's okay.
And got a valuable life lesson.
He did get 25 stitches, but he's okay.
Okay, a valuable life lesson and a valuable trip to the hospital. Okay, we have the best episode for you. We can't wait. So many fun things on tap. First, talking about some life updates, including racing thoughts. I had a race this weekend. Always interesting. Talk about the carb revolution in endurance sports via cycling. Some coaching reflections. That comes from the National Football League, the NFL. Talk about the U.S. Trail Half Marathon Champs and a really inspiring story from there. A cool iron study on when you can time your iron intake. Talk about the New York City Marathon, Strava as a dating app, and hot takes.
Okay, I'm already so excited for hot takes. Maybe we should consider moving them up at some point.
Yeah.
I feel like we spend like 75 minutes. I mean, we get really excited about everything, but then by the time we get to hot takes, it's like they're here.
And we always miss so many good ones.
It's so true, yeah.
This, I think we have like 8 or 10 really good ones today, so maybe we can bring it in a little bit sooner as we're talking.
Well, you had a secret document of hot takes that I've never been privy to, and this morning you sent it to me, and I was like, wait a second, there's many, many pages of these.
On Patreon, our fans sent in like literally 1,000 hot takes. So they are amazing. And you choose a much different cohort than I do. Like I usually choose the really kind of goofy ones that are a little nasty in some ways. You choose the ones that are actually interesting and have really cool takes in them.
Well, so I got to select them today and I feel like there'll be some good discussion starting those hot takes, but we should actually just like publish that whole document. I feel like people would love to see just like the raw hot takes.
I think it would make us feel better about whatever's in our own brains to see other people's brain droppings out there and be like, whoa, that's what someone thinks on that topic.
Oh, yeah. It was giving the wild and uninhibited thoughts in my brain a giant hug. Yeah, yeah. So but it also was bad because I felt like, I don't know, I felt more empowered by it.
Yeah.
And maybe some wild things are going to come out in this podcast.
Oh, man. Well, you know who else needs a giant hug?
Who?
Me.
Why?
After my race this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That's our first topic. So I did a trail half marathon. We teased it on last week's episode talking about local races. Also teased that you never know in Colorado, fast people might show up. And dumbass over here raced like a 7-year-old at his first track meet or something, because I just went to the front and was like, I'm going to dictate the pace. And then when we hit the big climb in this half marathon at mile 8, it's like, okay, the hurt's going on now. And I tried to make a move and made a move. And then one guy responded to my move. And then two guys responded to my move, Ben and Ace. And I went so lactic. My body just completely flooded myself with hydrogen ions. I've never had this happen before. For some reason, my entire life, I got so heavy and I was able to get to the finish line. The time was respectable, but man, Megan, I learned a lesson.
Oh man, well you went for it.
I did.
We have the saying like, fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
You know what? You found out. You also fucked around and I respect both of those.
Yeah, I was thinking, I'm such a beautiful idiot. You know what I mean? It's like, I do respect that I did that, but at the same time, why? If I had raced more tactically, I think I would have been ready to take the win or at least compete for it.
You know, that's what matters. You might as well look sexy while you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was wearing the swap singlet, so I did look pretty sexy.
Yes, and we had a whole conversation on Patreon on Friday about whether or not you're going to wear Vaporflies.
Yeah.
And you, in fact, were smart and you stuck with the Hoka Tecton 2s, which I think was a very smart decision. So you are also a smart, sexy idiot out there.
Oh, I don't know, Megan. If I had worn Vaporflies, maybe I would have been a little bit less fucked at the end of that race. So I think the reason I wanted to talk about it is just to bring up for everyone, the reason that you race and get vulnerable in these settings is, well, one, you push yourself in ways that you might not in training, but two, you learn things that are such important lessons athletically. Like what I relearned at this race and the type of thing that I'm going to just take with me in the rest of my athletic career is, in respecting the people you're racing, you also feed off them and build off that energy in ways that support your own performance. So like for me, it would have been so much smarter, instead of going to the front and just leading for most of the race, to pace off other people, let the paces slow down so that then I'd be ready to make the move later. But what actually happened is I was pushing my threshold most of the race. And so then when I made the move, my heart rate shot up to 186. And once that happened for me, there was no recovering because it wasn't an immediate downhill. So I need to understand my physiology better and have better race strategy going in. And I only would have learned that at a race like this.
Well, I guess I'll counter that. We actually had a long conversation about race strategy the night before. And this was almost...
Okay, long conversation. You mean like a 20-second conversation. We were just like, sure, David, do what you want.
Okay, well, this was the plan, was that you were going to take it out and then make this move at mile 9, or you're going to make a move. You kind of had like two different parallel strategies. And I would say you followed exactly your race strategy. And it didn't quite pan out the way you wanted it to. But if it did, you'd have been like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Look at this strategy. How do you adjust? I think the hard part about being an athlete is like when you're racing competitively at the front, so much of that race strategy depends on how the race plays out. And you need like, you need to run like 1,000 computer simulations to figure that out, especially when the race is competitive. Yeah. So how do you like, how do you balance that as a coach giving advice, as an athlete who's the one making the decisions out there on the fly?
Well, I think unless you have some big evidence that you are ready to just absolutely throw down in ways people have never seen, the smartest way to race is a more conservative approach. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've had to learn throughout my life because I'm an aggressive racer. I like to go to the front and I like to hammer. And my best races don't come from that though anymore. They might have a little bit when I was young and an unknown and things like that. But now, like, you know, everyone's catching up on training theory. Like, you need to go into those races, like, respecting that, like, broader understanding and also respecting the fact that I'm a little bit older now. So doing that is not going to be the best approach because my VO2 max is probably gone down just slightly, even though my other metrics have gone up. So I learned a lot. This beautiful idiot is ready to become a beautiful, like, middle of the bell curve guy on my next race. And then maybe at some point in my life, I'll actually be a smart racer.
Well, it was a great training day out there. And we actually had your Strava to look at. And you'd run this race 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And the compare efforts between this race and the race 2 years ago was wild. Because at mile 9, when you made this move, it was like you gained... you made up like 45 seconds on yourself. And then all of a sudden it was just this like straight line of the regression to the finish. But I would say that like that feeling of like fucking around and finding out and having a hard time and hitting the wall lasted to like 7 PM that day. So clearly it was a great training stimulus. Like you got hit hard.
I got hit so hard. My stomach got rocked. After I think I just had like lactate poisoning essentially. I don't know. It was rough, Megan.
I took this picture of you on the ground in our bedroom here. Yeah. And you're just like flat on your face on the ground going through it. And it lasted all the way to 7 p.m. We had dinner with our friends, Bob and Jen, and it took shepherd's pie, which is a total new thing for us. It was amazing. And you had your first beer in 3 years. Yeah. So I feel like you going lactic, you're like, just give me the alcohol. And let me see what can happen.
I drank an entire thing of Pepto-Bismol Ultra too. But fortunately, on the way to the race, the final parting thought on this was I heard an amazing song on the funky music playlist from Spotify, which is called HS, and it's by Tom Cardi. I think it's kind of a jokey song, you need to listen to it.
And he's a comedian and musician.
Okay, great. So you searched him. Yeah. I don't know why it was on my funky playlist. I guess it is kind of a funky song.
Because comedy is funky.
It is funky.
Yeah, comedy is the best. It's funky. Yeah. It's funky fresh. Yeah.
So search this on YouTube, actually, because there they have the lyrics as he's doing it. It's a very funny video. But this is from the very start of the song. Take a lesson from space. They say Pluto's not a planet. Do you think that Pluto gives a shit? Pluto's not gonna quit, because Pluto can take a hit. And Pluto knows what Pluto is, and Pluto knows that Pluto's hot shit.
Dude, you crushed that.
I did, yeah.
That was amazing.
But the song is incredible, and it's essentially using an astronomy metaphor to tell you all your hot shit, and that comparison is kind of the enemy of happiness. Like, and he uses these like celestial bodies to get to that point. And if you've ever heard something that is directly designed to be injected into my veins, it's a comedian using astronomy metaphors to tell you you're hot shit.
Well, what a perfect pre-race song. So you texted me this on the way to the race. And then also a perfect post-race song as you're laying face down on our floor processing life. You just think about Pluto instead.
Yeah. So I think many races are going to wind up with me on the floor, especially with my stomach issues. But you know what, Megan? I'm happy. I learned a lot at that race. Still got on the podium, even though I crossed the finish line, seeing cross-eyed, was unable to move. It was quite a journey.
Well, you still made money too. So we actually talked on our Patreon that you had to pay $100 to be part of this race, which I think is awesome. Invest in yourself. It'll make you want to like fuck around and find out a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I think you made $200 in third place.
Unfortunately, it was just $100.
Oh, wait, you netted even. High five.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not going to count the Pepto-Bismol or the gas money.
Well, you got even and you got a great training effort. Yeah. So I put that on like a net positive.
And congrats to Ben and Ace. They absolutely crushed it and deserved to kick my ass. But such a good experience. And the lesson there is race your local races. Yes. As we talked about last week, trail half marathons nearby, even if you're training for 100 miles or any other event, road racing, anything, hop in those races. They are so fun, such great training days, such great learning experiences. And you can learn so much about yourself and your training out there.
Well, I was really proud of you for going for it. And also really proud of you for caring about it too. Yeah. Like, you know, you've stepped up into the like arena of some of the biggest races out there. And this is a fun backyard local race. But the way that you were talking about it at dinner was like, you were so pumped and so excited about it. And something about seeing you care that much about it was really like inspiring and empowering to me. So I thought that was very cool.
That's the coolest thing about athletics. It's essentially an excuse to give a fuck ton of shits about something that doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
And you know that in the back of your head, but you still care really deeply. And I think it's kind of like life. And that's why it's such a good metaphor for this cosmic astronomical journey we're all on, is because the more you dig down into anything you care about, the more you realize that none of it really matters outside of, you know, the meaning that you're ascribing to it. And so ascribing meaning to something that is even more meaningless than the other things we have going on and caring about it deeply makes us better at handling the ups and downs from those other things that actually do matter, whether that's, you know, relationships or work or parenting or any of that. So, you know, running makes me a better person. And I think the reason it makes me a better person is because sometimes I fuck around and sometimes, like at this race, I find out.
You really, really found out.
I found out.
But I think like, I think that the case is like fuck around more often.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
See what happens. Actually, one thing that I learned in this process. So as we've been talking more about local races, I've actually gotten some feedback from international listeners that local races are a lot cheaper over in Europe. So they cost like 10 to 20 euro to do local races over in Europe. Yeah. How much fun would that be? You could just race every weekend.
Yeah. But how do they make money?
That's actually, I mean, I want to support like race director. So it's like, no, invest in yourself, race directors.
And maybe it's one reason that UTMB can sprout up there and create these massive, like this massive conglomerate.
Because there's less competition?
Well, yeah. Well, there's less competition amongst like, you know, when we say local race directors here, like the people that are doing those jobs are actually making a good bit of money in some cases.
Yes, as they should. Yes.
As they should. I mean, when they do a good job, they should.
Yes.
And so it creates a level of competition over here that is a little bit more difficult and I think creates more of an outroar or up, you know, outrage when something like last week with Whistler happens in UTMB.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I feel like moral of the story, race local races and fuck around and find out.
Yes. And bring some Pepto-Bismol Ultra if you have a stomach like mine.
Actually, the one that you have is like menthol in it. It has cooling on the way down. What do you think of that? That seems very strange.
Well, it's because I've really become a connoisseur of my different Pepto-Bismol flavors.
Well, why do you think that is? You actually, so on Wednesday
this
week.
Okay, so we're taking a step back and making fun of my stomach now?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, yes. Okay, yeah, we'll be very real about it.
I saw the devilish twinkle in your eye where you're like, I'm going to bring listeners in to David really being like, just having his issues.
Well, as a lawyer, you could tell that I was like probing like a lawyer into your GI system. So the same thing happened on Wednesday where you were face down on our bedroom floor. I feel like it's been a theme of this week. Why do you think it is?
You know, I think a couple things. One, for those listeners out there that ever go through stomach issues after you run, almost like ischemic stomach issues, know that you're not alone. It's something I've dealt with since I first got into the sport. I had an explanation when I was in college. Like a doctor told me that I was celiac and I couldn't eat gluten. And so I went off gluten for a while and it got better. But then I realized I wasn't a celiac when I actually got thorough testing on it. And so, you know, that wasn't it. And later on, I learned, okay, I can't do NSAIDs, let's say. I can't do like ibuprofen. I got to limit, you know, some of like my fiber in my diet and things like that. But, you know, I took a microbiome test and it came back mostly normal. I don't know what the explanation is. I just think some people have stomachs that are not built to go for days. It's like tough.
Or also stomachs that make it hard to process artificial sweetener.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah,
you know where I'm going now. Okay. Dude, you missed the leading question.
I did. So on Tuesday night, we went to, there's a Chick-fil-A impersonator called Bird Call that is in Whole Foods.
And it's delicious, actually.
On the checkout, I was like, oh, I'm going to get a soda to get some carbs in before my workout tomorrow. And so I grabbed a soda and I should have looked at the ingredient label because half the drinks at Whole Foods have like 19,000 ingredients, of which like there's like these weird flowers that are going to cause you to like see God.
There's like lavender in your soda. Yeah,
exactly. But what this one has, I think it's called Olipop soda.
Yeah.
And it had inulin, so like a prebiotic fiber. It had 10 grams of fiber in a one can of soda. And I did not realize this until I finished the can of soda. So that can explain my Wednesday. I don't know if that can explain my Saturday.
Okay, well, here's my hot take is that 98% of the sodas at Whole Foods are actually not soda.
True.
Yes. I think actually anything in my book with artificial sweetener, also not a soda.
No, I agree. So I don't know. I mean, I'm constantly trying to figure out this stomach thing. I think it's one reason that the longer races are actually going to be quite good for me. Because the longer I go, the fewer issues I have. It's much bigger problem at high intensity when the GI tract shuttles blood away, you know, from my stomach lining and things like that. But it's a journey, you know, like anyone who's gone through stomach pain after exercise or any time kind of knows how painful it can be. And what I like about my focus is that even knowing that, I'm still willing to throw myself into the fire and see what happens. So I'm hopeful it'll get better at some point.
Well, as runners, we're weird people. Like, you're willing to throw yourself into the fire at local races and pay $100 for it too.
$100 for the privilege of being passed out on the floor.
We're so weird. Yeah. But one thing that you've actually, and I think this is probably a lot of listeners out there struggle with stomach issues. One thing that you've found to help actually is being really warm. Yeah. So usually when this happens, you come in and you like go to our hot tub or you come up and take a hot bath. So this weekend, after you were like face down on our bedroom floor, you made your way into our bathtub and just like turned it on high and sat there for 45 minutes. And it actually seemed to help.
Yeah, that's probably a diagnostic clue.
Yeah.
So any doctors out there that know why getting super warm can help make this better, let me know. I've actually heard that people that have marijuana poisoning sometimes like have issues that get ignited with really hot showers or hot baths or things. So maybe there's some similar pathway. Maybe there's some connection there that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, well, actually, if you think about like ischemia process, maybe you just need to like warm your intestines to bring more blood flow there.
Yeah. Or maybe I need Pepto-Bismol with menthol now.
In the bathtub.
Sponsored. But no, we're not actually sponsored.
Well, it's funny. Kombucha is my drink of choice in the bathtub. Yours is Pepto-Bismol.
Yes, exactly. Okay, let's get on to the carb revolution. This is from an amazing article that came out in Velo News. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know we were like on the cutting edge of saying high carb intakes are what is changing endurance sports. And the place that we always thought about is in fatigue resistance or durability, as it's called in the research. How much power can you put out or how fast can you go under fatigue after you've already burned a certain amount of calories? And our rationale for that was that part of it is genetic, part of it is in the nervous system, but both of those variables can be optimized with wildly high fueling amounts, or at least fueling amounts that would have been viewed as wildly high just a few years ago.
And I think there's been so many different fads that have come and gone in the nutrition world. And what I find curious is that I think that if you are not on the train of high carbohydrate intake and you're trying to compete at the very top level, I think you're not going to be able to. Like, I think this is the type of thing that's going to stick around and stay around. And if you're not doing it, your body can't tolerate, I think it's going to be really hard to fully like get to where your peak physiology could be.
Yeah, this is food doping to the max.
Yes, yeah.
This is the thing that makes you the healthiest, best performer that you can be. And it has been now vetted at the top level of sports to the point that no one that you see at the top level of cycling, let's say, isn't fueling 100 to 120 grams of carbohydrates per hour during really hard activity. Obviously, cycling is a lot different than running. You know, in running, we have the jarring. I would never get ischemic bowel or whatever happens to me from cycling. But this type of fueling is definitely possible to get close to adapt to, or at least inch your levels a little bit higher over time. And that's going to wildly improve your performance.
And what I'm curious too is how it relates to longevity, because we also know that it improves adaptation. And my guess is that it improves like cellular aging in the context of being an athlete. What I find fascinating is that in many of the interviews that we've done with the GOATs, like Courtney and Jim has been doing food doping essentially since like before it was even a thing.
Yeah.
And his training is bonkers to me. And I never would have predicted that he would be able to sustain that and be where he is today.
Yeah.
Like turning the clock back 8 years ago. And I think a lot of it has to do with he was food doping before food doping was a thing.
Yeah. And you look back at the early phases of ultra running and so many athletes came and went so fast.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because back then people were talking about depletion training and stuff like that. Things that, they might cause little physiological changes that perhaps improve fat oxidation short term in some cases. But you're going to optimize that variable anyway. And in the process, you're going to age yourself 5 years. You're going to age every part of your body. Your Achilles tendons are going to go to mush because your body is not able to rebuild. And so there's an incredible quote from this article that I just wanted to highlight. The ability to tolerate carbs is becoming one of the biggest factors in winning or losing. This is from a bike team's trainer. It's impossible for a rider to be able to maintain the same power all through a long race, but a rider that's not optimally fueled will see much faster declines in their power profile. Carbohydrate is essential to mitigating that drop. That's why we always need them fueling so much right now in both training and racing.
Well, one thing that I've been like interested about is I feel like in the cycling world, they're using this to rationalize the fact that cyclists are able to put out like much higher peak powers at the end of a race.
Yeah, much
and
higher.
That to me, I buy. Like that makes a ton of sense. I have started to see some justifications that it means that their peak power in general, like even in the first hour of training, is higher.
Yeah.
Do you believe that? Because for me, it's like, I totally understand where this type of fueling will increase performance like 4 hours into a race. What do you think about like even just fresh? And I could see some arguments of saying like, okay, like maybe it helps recovery, maybe it helps muscular support. But I feel like for athletes that are already optimized in some of these areas, like where do you fall on that explanation?
I think yes. And that's where my hope derives at the top end of endurance sports in general, especially the long distance events, like whether cycling or marathon running or things like that. It's okay. In the past, in the early 2000s, we were like, Lance Armstrong's just working harder than everybody else. Those 6 hour rides from him are, you know, coming from, you know, just guts and grit. When in reality, it was coming from EPO, testosterone, and HGH. Mm-hmm. But what if we have, you know, EPO, testosterone, and HGH like properties that just come from fueling your body plenty. And so yes, maybe EPO is 10% and fueling your body is enough is 1 or 2%. But if you distribute that across the training sessions that you do, you start to see the benefits. So on the day, being able to fuel with a lot of carbs obviously makes a difference, but it's only going to make a difference relative to whatever your top end ceiling is. Mm-hmm. How do you raise that ceiling? Within each training session, you're trying to get 0.5% more out of your body. How do you get 0.5% more out of your body? You fuel those training sessions well. And so you could see over time, if an athlete really embraces this, maybe they're just able to improve, you know, their performance overall. And especially in cycling, because they have so many race days during the year. If they're racing 50 days, each one of those being fueled optimally will cause a huge training stimulus independent of the race outcomes.
Okay, that was an outstanding explanation. Yes. High five. Crush that. Okay.
Second high five on the first episode, Megan.
Oh my gosh, we're rolling and vibing.
You're into me right now.
I'm really into you. Yeah.
I'm glad you're into me after you saw what I did to that toilet this weekend.
That's gross. I'm still into you.
Well, we have a power flush now, so you didn't have to see it, fortunately.
Yeah, I usually did before the power flush. Okay. But you know what is EPO, testosterone, and HGH all in one?
What?
A Reese's peanut butter cup.
That's true.
Yeah. We got them this Halloween, and I feel like that could explain the gains.
Yeah. So a listener wrote in that they're 87 calories per cup. So you can just use them as your fueling. And I'd be totally into that. I would definitely be doing 300 mile races if I just fueled with Reese's, I think.
Would you go chocolate versus like fruity? For me, I could see like—
Wait, fruity Reese's cup?
No, there's no such thing.
Okay, I was about to say, what abomination are you talking about? That is an affront to nature and God.
It actually truly would be, as much as I like uplift fruity candy. Here's my thing, like at baseline, chocolate, so delicious. Uh-huh. But when I'm exercising or like immediately post-exercising, all I want is like fruity, sugary stuff.
Like, give me an example.
Swedish fish or gummy worms or gummy bears or peach rings. Oh my gosh, amazing.
Right now, I am questioning our compatibility and the fact that we blended our genetics into a baby. I don't know if I feel good about any of these things right now.
Okay, but I think we're compatible at baseline, maybe not while exercising.
Yeah, that's actually true.
Yes,
A lot of our biggest arguments have happened on the trail.
We're like 17 miles into a long run. Yeah. And, you know, maybe the argument just all derived from gummy worms.
Yeah, well, I am team chocolate. Chocolate and peanut butter and all those things. Anyone who goes to like a frozen yogurt place and orders like, I don't know, mango when they have cookies and cream right there.
Oh, the worst.
I'm like, what is their problem? How does their brain experience the world?
And then they're putting like pineapple on top of as toppings. And first of all, pineapple, heavy, expensive, mostly made of water.
Yeah.
And there's like Heath bar and cookies and cream and
Butterfinger
Reese's Cups.
Is the best. Butterfinger. Oh, so light.
Yeah. No, Heath bar is the best.
Heath bar's a little heavier. I've gamed this out, Megan. I brought in McKinsey as a consulting firm to come evaluate my decisions in the frozen yogurt bar. Yeah, what it actually leads me to think is that, you know, everyone experiences the world so differently. Because like for me, I would only want the creamy things. And humanity is a beautiful tapestry.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm sure our taste buds literally are all genetically different to some extent.
And genetic differences overall, even when talking about something like fueling and all of these things, it's amazing how much the genetic changes that start at baseline and then epigenetics act on them throughout, you know, your life history, how much that can influence individual response rates. And so as we're saying this, giving this fueling guidance that in the cycling peloton, it might be 100 to 120 grams per hour in hard stages. In running, that might be trying to go from 40 grams per hour to 75. And you might see that at 75, you're a little better, go up to 90. Of everything we talk about on the podcast, we get more emails about this than any other training topic. We get a lot of like, you know, more touchy-feely topics about self-acceptance and stuff, which is our favorite. But the number of people that have said food doping within exercise has fully altered their trajectory where they thought they were one thing and then they started winning races or something, it has been bonkers. And so, you know, even for me, like at the marathon the other week where I was able to close harder than I ever have. Part of it was from not racing like an idiot, but part of it was just, I've realized that I can get to 115 grams of carbs per hour. And if I do that, I don't get tired. What I thought was my endurance limit and my fatigue resistance limit is largely just, I was fueling inadequately.
Well, also food doping is touchy-feely too. Yeah, I'm actually kind of offended. Like Reese's peanut butter cups are the epitome of touchy-feeling. I'm kind of offended that you thought otherwise.
Wait, are you touching yourself with a Reese's peanut butter cup? Is that what you're saying?
It makes me want to touch myself. That's what I'm saying. And by association, you. Okay, but I have a question for you before we move on. Is there a lower end of a limit to what you consider to be like food doping? And I think those like parameters would probably be different in like trail running, ultra running versus cycling, where, you know, in cycling, there's not that much jostling of the stomach. What would you say is like grams per hour of carbohydrate would you consider to be the lower end of the limit?
I would say 90 grams of carbs per hour is the low end of food doping. Like once you get to 75, let's say, you're doing more traditional fueling strategies and you probably don't even need to adapt to it. Like whoever's listening to this, you can do 75 grams of carbs per hour right now. That's 250 calories per hour. But if you get to 90, like game can be changed. Actually, 75 is 300 calories per hour. Thanks for not correcting me. I just saw fear come into your eyes.
I was like, math, David, math. Yeah, yes. You can do it. Daylight savings time. You got it.
So true. But 90 is where you start to need to think about practicing it, gut behavior, and also improved recovery rates, where we start in the studies to see the exercise-induced muscle damage going way down. So this is also backed up by studies. Numerous studies find that once you get to 90 grams of carbs per hour, you start to see the muscle damage go down, soreness go down, performance the next day go up. But at 120, you see a little bit more GI distress in some cases.
Oh, probably a lot more GI distress.
Especially in running.
Yes.
But even better performance. So if you can kind of ride that line, where I've seen athletes be able to settle in is often 100 to 110. I rarely see 120 per hour in ultra runners. Do you ever see that?
Yeah, very. I mean, sometimes, yeah, no. I mean, maybe like one or two situations, but very rarely.
Yeah, exactly. So, but experiment with this. And this is another quote from the article. New formulations from nutrition brands like Morton, Precision Fuel and Hydration, and Science and Sport means the age-old carb ceiling of 60 to 90 grams per hour has been blown into another orbit.
An orbit. Yeah. Astronomy, right? Yeah. This is the best. we're close to Pluto.
This writer is hot shit. So Precision, it's very cool that they were mentioned in this because, as you know, we've been partnering with Precision. They've done so great. So go to precisionhydration.com and use code SWAP, S-W-A-P. You can try the new gels that are pushing these numbers higher. You really can't do this with a traditional goopy gel. Like it's hard. After a while, you get palate fatigue that will make you kind of like retch a little bit. Precision is one of these hydrogels that goes down so easy. So at precisionhydration.com, you can use the code SWAP to get 15% off. We love their gels, especially their 100 milligram caffeine gel. That shit is good.
It tastes like performance to me. Like anything about a hydrogel, as soon as it touches my palate, I'm like, it's time to go.
Yeah. And it goes down so easy.
Yeah. It goes down so fast.
You can just slurp all these gels. That's essentially where it's at is, you know, if you're kind of savoring 120 grams of carbs per hour, just like letting it sit on your tongue, tasting the umami, like that's not going to be good in hour three. Like that's rarely going to work. But if you ever watch the cyclists, no matter what gel they're using, I think Precision's used by Lotto, Team Lotto Destiny, they just push it all in their mouth almost all at once. And that's something you can train yourself to do with running. And it helps get this stuff in way easier.
I actually did that the other day at a traffic light on the bike. So I took one of the big bags of the Precision big ass gels and did that. And the car next to me looked at me and they were like, that is an addict right there. That is a Precision addict getting their dopamine.
This is gross, but I've also heard from some athletes that if it comes on their face. Oh, I can't say that. It just came out wrong. You get it. You get it, listeners. You can try it for yourself. So the big theme here is you train better and harder, then you race better, which means you train better and harder. And, you know, if you care about your training, you need to care about your mid-training fueling. This really starts to be implicated on runs over, let's say, 75 minutes, I would say. After that, on every one of your runs, unless it's very low intensity and not much over that, start to think about these numbers because you're going to expedite your recovery rates and just perform so much better and be happier because, you know, your cortisol is going to be lower. You're going to have fewer issues overall with injury, lack of sleep, other issues. Your HRV is going to go up. It's just where it's at right now in endurance sports. This is how to make endurance sports also go along with longevity, I think. Mm-hmm. Performance longevity and also life longevity.
And you're going to send yourself to orbit.
Yes. So true. Okay, you know who else should be sent to orbit, but in a bad way?
Who?
Josh McDaniels.
Oh, I echo that for sure. Yeah.
Okay, he's the ex-coach of the Las Vegas Raiders in the National Football League. And this is just a little aside on coaching. From my favorite website, which is defector.com. It's a sports website of... consisting of a lot of the writers that wrote for Deadspin and then started their own thing when Deadspin was bought by private equity, as we talked about last week. What I love about Defector is that its whole model is based on sustainability rather mm-hmm. than growth. So they're not designed to say, we need to grow 10% per year to satisfy shareholders or whatever. They're like, we want to have sustainable lives doing what we love and bringing, you know, this information to people. And I love that because that's how we structure Swap. Like, you know, growth is not our goal. And that's why we've never expanded it. When a lot of people have asked us, like, you know, do we want to do that? Like bringing in other coaches or anything like that. It's like, well, we'd prefer to just help other people's businesses rather than growing to the ends of the earth.
And you've sent me so many Defector articles.
Yes.
I would say like journal articles come first, Defector articles come second, and like songs about Pluto come third. Yeah. But the Defector articles are so well written and they're actually hilarious too, which I feel like is a key, like, I feel like we both love like reading comedy and yeah. writing, and it's this article that was written is so funny.
Yeah. Mix of funny and really touching and interesting. You know, I think the writers in a place like this where their paycheck is not tied to getting the most clicks possible come up with really interesting things. And so Josh McDaniels was an assistant coach for the New England Patriots during a lot of their good years, an offensive coordinator when Tom Brady was winning all those games. He went to coach the Denver Broncos mm-hmm. where he didn't do very well and he was fired in year two. Then he went to coach the Las Vegas Raiders 10 years later, fired in year two. But the unifying factor in both of his experiences is that the players hated him basically across the board. The stories are a legion. And the article that was written in Defector was actually by a former player named Nate Jackson, who was a tight end. He actually he has an amazing book, very good writer. And some of the things he said, I think, were a really good reflection for how we can all be leaders or mentors in sports.
And when I was first reading this article, he actually acknowledged his bias. He was like, look, yeah. I was playing for him and I was cut for yeah. him. But then when you start to like see the treasure trove of information coming out about him as a coach, it's like, oh yeah, this is like so legit.
Yeah, and obviously we have no inside info, but I trust Nate with his word. And so here is from the conclusion of the article. Ultimately, this should be a lesson to everyone in the sports world. If you don't have the respect of your team, it doesn't matter how clever you are on the fucking whiteboard. Coaching is about connecting with other humans. It's about paying attention to what they are going through and responding to it. It's about listening to what they tell you. It's about putting them in positions to succeed, challenging them to be their best, and respecting the effort they give you. Honoring their sacrifice, believing in them, showing them that you love them, not just as players, but as people. It's about setting them up to shine, not running off the brightest among them so you can be the star instead. In the end, it was McDaniels' ego that did him in. He always believed he knew better and was better, but he never did and he never was.
Well, I love the use of the term, the word ego there, because yeah. I feel like I've, like, reading a lot of, like, coaching breakdowns across literally every single sport and even across, like, leadership, I feel like strong ego is almost like the ultimate. I mean, obviously you need some level of ego yeah. to respond to like be alive in the world. But when you start looking at like ego on the far right of the spectrum, I feel like it fucks everything up.
Yeah. And that's the big reflection I had here. Because this also goes along with Bob Knight died last week,
mm-hmm. yeah.
who was the coach of the Indiana basketball team. A legendary coach, given that he's a Hall of Fame coach. He won a few national championships, had an undefeated team.
Yeah. But he was a legendary coach who like choked a player with yeah. bananas.
He was notoriously a terrible person. And another article came out in Defector. Actually, I wanted to read a quote from this because it ties it all together. So listen to this, another beautiful piece of reading. This is from Charles Pierce, who's a best-selling author. What came out after Knight was revealed by a covert videotape to have choked Neil Reed at an Indiana practice was a narrative of sociopathic and violent indulgence. It was not a story of an, quote, interesting and successful man with a, quote, dark side. It was a story of externalized evil, occasionally illuminated by professional success. Bob Knight was a giant, and when he fell like one. And that's all there is to say about it. Hyde died in Jekyll's tattered clothes.
Wow. Well, I would love almost like a study or like a counterfactual example of what would happen if you took, like, I feel like sometimes these coaches have brilliant whiteboard tactics, yeah. but horrific ways of like dealing with players and interacting with players. Like, could they be the greatest coach of all time if you took like those whiteboard tactics and mixed in like a little bit more kindness or empathy? Or like, do you not have like, I guess it's a matter of like, I guess I have questions about causation there, yeah. But I just would love to have an experiment in which like you switch that up.
Yeah. So I think it's complicated for the individual.
Yes.
Because Bob Knight being sociopathic and some of the things he did were objectively evil. Even if there's some listener out there from Indiana that might respect his accomplishments with the team, even though I think we should always put results on the side in conversations like this, those individuals have their own backgrounds, often grounded in situations that might be almost abusive from mm-hmm. their past. And
yes, yes.
As a result, it's like, okay, you can understand that. But I think what we see when we see, you know, across the population is that the people that are successful while being moderately evil, mm-hmm. it's almost always they are successful in spite of those traits rather than because of them. But people take the wrong lesson and think it's because of them.
Yes. I also feel like a characteristic that unifies these coaches that I would say are slightly more evil is I feel like they do have charisma.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like the charisma, maybe not even using the right word.
Exactly the right word.
Cause I was trying to think of like charisma has positive connotations, but
no,
I think when you combine charisma and
Donald
evil,
Trump's charismatic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he's very captivating. And I think there's a level of captivating that it almost is worse because it like, I don't know, it like sweeps people into that evil without them necessarily realizing they're there.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the problems is it's all manipulative.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So let's look at the counterfactual here of someone that has had great success, which is Bill Belichick,
mm-hmm.
the coach that Josh McDaniels was trying to copy and in the process, you know, crushed his career. Bill Belichick, notoriously bristly guy,
mm-hmm.
but the counter with him is that yes, he does a lot of these things, but he also shows deep care.
Yes.
And he understands people well enough to understand that, you know, it's not about him. He's mm-hmm. a part of the system, not separate from the system. Whereas Josh McDaniels uses ego to put himself above the system. And so, you know, Bill Belichick is a fascinating story here. Or, you know, basically any other person you think, you know, who I was thinking of when you're talking was mm-hmm. Steve Jobs.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I think a lot of people and a lot of CEOs and stuff think Steve Jobs was successful because of these really negative traits he had, this reality distortion field, how he manipulated people and some of the bad things about him. It's like, no, he was successful because he was brilliant.
He was charismatic.
And knew how to motivate people.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, he never like let his ego guide everything the company did. Like he always held himself to the same standards. And the people that don't hold themselves to the same standards end up like fucking their players. So here's another quote from the Josh McDaniels article. Can Josh design a good play? Sure. Can he make his players care about running that play? He cannot. When the game drags on, the team whose players care more about each other, and yes, their coach, will dig the deepest to find a way to win. I respected Mike Shanahan, who was the coach before McDaniels in Denver, too much to leave a single drop of unspent juice in my tank. I would die to execute his vision. Josh elicited no such feelings.
And I love that quote because it makes me, I've played for so many coaches before, whether that's like field hockey or running. And there are so many coaches that I would legit, I mean, maybe not die. I would
you would be on the floor after drinking a thing of Pepto-Bismol for.
Yeah, waiting to go into that hot bath
to consume
the whole thing of Pepto-Bismol. But there are so many coaches like that. And I feel like those are the coaches
also
that
the
like,
reverse.
And also the reverse too. And I feel like, for me, actually, my college coach in field hockey got fired. And it was the ultimate, like, I wanted to rebel. Like, and I didn't want to like die for her. I was like, I never want to play field hockey again.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's wild to think about that position of power of coaching and in leadership too. Like, I mean, I feel like this discussion extends so far beyond coaching into like the workplace and being a teacher and like what it takes to motivate people.
I think relationships in general.
That's
you know,
true. Yeah.
Try to disconnect and understand where ego is driving the equation and where your motivation tactics are not grounded in love.
Yeah.
So maybe you could argue that Bill Belichick's a little different in that there's some love there. But what are we seeing now? It's so fascinating. As soon as Tom Brady, the superstar quarterback, left New England has not been very good.
They've unraveled. Also, do you know how delightful and delicious that is to me?
Oh, I love it.
It's so great to see them unravel.
Well, just as a coach, because like, you know, I don't like New England. Great. Go good for them. But like, knowing that Bill Belichick made his mark on like, you know, being gruff and cutting players as soon as they had no use to him, it's like, it's frustrating because I'm like, is that the lesson we're going to get? Much like Bob Knight gave a whole generation of basketball coaches in the 70s freedom to be assholes.
Yeah.
It's like that has nothing to do with their success. And now New England's not very good. They actually lost to the Washington Commanders this weekend, my childhood team, which is how you know you're hitting rock bottom. Yeah. And Tom Brady went to Tampa Bay and won a Super Bowl. It's like, okay, well, how much of what we thought was genius was maybe some genius mixed in with a quarterback that, you know, painted over the gruff edges mm-hmm. that would backfire eventually. And so, you know, for me, the lesson from all these people is to think about, how are you actually lifting others up? Like Bill Belichick has this coaching tree, and you, what coaching trees are is coaches that have learned from the coach. So people that have worked for them, like Josh McDaniels. He has 8 people that have gone on to coach for other teams. Mm-hmm. Only 2 of those coaches have winning records, and both of those coaches were fired almost instantly. Like they weren't very mm-hmm. good. So basically all the coaches he has mentored have not been very good. Meanwhile, you look at Mike Shanahan, the other coach mentioned by Josh McDaniels, and his coaches have won 5 Super Bowls. And that's what I think you get when you're actually mentoring from a place of love and lack of ego. And so I think the world come around to Ted Lasso over Bill Belichick is the ultimate joy. Maybe not Bill
even
Belichick.
In season 3.
even in season 3, because every second he gave a shit. He cared.
Yes, yeah.
And he loved people and he held himself to those same standards almost to a fault. And so, I don't know, the lesson for me is I think there's a lot of leadership books and manuals and things that are grounded in a place of you need to be above your subordinates. You need to be mean. You need to provide accountability in ways that are brutal. And I think what we're actually seeing is there are exceptions that are grounded in almost places of manipulation mm-hmm. where personalities that themselves are singular and are able to, you know, have this reality distortion field are able to do it. But for almost everybody else, you're going to fuck over those around you. And even if you don't, you're going to fuck over yourself because eventually it rots from the inside.
And I think what I get back to is the idea too, that like, if you are in that position of power, whether it's as like a leader or a coach or like,
I think we all are
in some form of relationship or whether it's with your dog, we like barely have a position of power over Addie.
No power.
But I think you have to be intentional about it and really understand it and come at it with a lot of love.
Yeah. So true. So, you know, we love you all. And I think on this podcast, we talk from a lot of like, oh, here's this study. Hopefully you all know that even as we say these things and we're hopefully positions of authority and had some success in this world, we're also open.
Learning all the time. Yeah.
And the people out there that aren't coaches, you can have ideas that are better than ours. And if so, that's awesome. And we want to learn from you. And I think one of the problems with some of these coaches is they kind of calcify in their worldviews, even if they're able to put up really good plays on the whiteboard.
Yeah, just don't send us worldviews about chocolate at mile 80 of a race. Oh, it's not happening. It's gummy bear territory only.
The place I have ego is about my Reese's Cups and smooth, savory ice creams. Okay, so now for an amazing story from the U.S. Trail Half Marathon Champs this weekend in Moab, Utah.
And it was a stacked race, which makes me really excited because I feel like we talk about on here all the time that like we need to elevate and uplift shorter trail racing because I feel like so much of the time, like ultra marathons get kind of the coverage, but there were so many good athletes there and it made me really excited.
So excited. Both the men's race and the women's race stacked across the board. But the story we wanted to focus on was from the women's race.
Actually, before you do that.
Oh, yes.
Can I give you props for a second?
Can you?
You coached both the men's, Mika Bayodin-Rousseau, and the women's winner of the race. And so I thought that was very cool.
Well, thank you. I mean,
you're brilliant.
No,
you don't know time zones, but you are brilliant.
Definitely has very little to do with me. Both of those athletes were, you know, gifted from the hand of God herself. But it was so cool because, you know, when you coach, you get to see this journey behind the scenes. And Bailey has now opened up about her journey. Mm-hmm. She ended up winning this race by almost 5 minutes.
Yeah, she ran so fast. Like, what happened? That was insane.
And this race has been run for a very long time. And the second place time would have been the course record, I think, or at least on Strava, which points out just how remarkable her race was. But if you followed Bailey Kowalczyk, her history has, you know, she's been an incredible athlete for a really long time. But earlier this year, actually last December, she got sick. And after this sickness, had some issues. So I'm going to read from an Instagram post that she brought out recently. In December, I had a 5-day-long fever with body aches, brain fog, and extreme fatigue. Tested negative for COVID, RSV, and flu. Didn't think much of it, but I dropped from the Houston Marathon because my body was just feeling quite powerless with running, anything harder than easy. In January, I was so dizzy all the time, migraines, chest pressure with running. February/March, tried to get back to normal running, but everything felt off. 3 miles was beyond hard. Chest pressure and racing heart continued. I got sore from every easy run, and my knees started to consistently hurt. Showed up to a start line with zero judgment at the Gorge 30K and ran at a controlled effort until I completely lost control of my legs. And she's not exaggerating. Like,
no, yeah.
I saw a finish line video from a friend that was like, this is, something is happening.
Oh, I was like, does Bailey have a stress fracture in like multiple places in her body? Yeah. It was really concerning actually watching her finish. Yeah.
And then final line, I could hardly coordinate a run to finish because my quads weren't firing at all. And then not only that, after that race, I was like, okay, something's happening here.
Yeah.
But she like, it'll resolve, right? Like, we don't have an answer. Like, maybe this is long COVID. Maybe this is something else.
Well, she went to so many specialists. Yeah. And, like, answers were not coming in. And I felt like it was, I mean, it was just this, like, really frustrating journey with her. Yeah. And I think we both felt that so viscerally, because when someone is going through something like this, you almost, like, want answers to some extent. Yeah. Because then you can figure out how to treat it.
And yeah. You know this better than anybody, yeah. right? Like, yeah. with your autoimmune condition and, like, wanting answers. And for her, you can imagine how hopeless it is now. She was on Team USA at the World Championships in June in Austria, and she DNF'd essentially at 10K of a 42K, which for one of the best athletes in the world, this has now been going on 6 months. Mm-hmm. Like, where is the hope?
Yeah.
Right? Like, can you imagine being in her shoes? I mean, you can. Like, what is that feeling like?
Oh, the uncertainty of it is, like, really shitty. I mean, I feel like it's this sort of thing that, like, is on your brain at all times. Like, even if you're taking a meeting during the day, it's, like, there randomly ticking away in the background. And, like, for me right now, I'm not a professional runner. And I feel like when you are, and Bailey is, and she has this amazing life outside of being a professional runner, but it's, like, it's also your job too.
Yeah.
And how hard is that? Yeah. When you have this, like, uncertainty.
Megan, it is your job. You know what I mean? In the sense of, like, this is the thing that you structure your life around. It is like, how you structure your work.
Well, it's very true. But I actually had the reflection the other day that I think now I'm a coach first and an athlete second.
I love it. Yeah.
And I fucking love that. And it's great. And I think for me, it takes some of the pressure off being an athlete. Like, I mean, I do that because it's like, that's where I find my most joy and passion, but I'm also not in my 20s like Bailey is. Like, I've sent it. I feel like really satisfied and complete. And, you know, Bailey's in a different place than I am because she's younger and more talented and like super fast. And so I feel for her on that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to table a few of this thing because I think you're talking a big game right now, but one, you and Bailey are both infinitely talented. And you know, your future is going to be so fucking bright, but you're in, I think, a little bit more of the dark forest that she's describing in mm-hmm. this Instagram post.
Yes. Yeah.
And so what happened next? Like, there was no one day where everything was better. We just started to see glimmers of hope. And she kept putting herself out there, kept giving it a try, kept treating her body well and seeing specialists and doing what they said, but also just maintaining the idea that eventually this was going to get better. And, you know, yes, things got better. And at this race, she had a race for the history books. And still, things are not 100%. Like, she still has those tough days. But the reason I wanted to highlight this is, one, follow Bailey. She's a great coach too, sponsored by Nike. But two, these long-term issues, whether they're health issues or unexplained training drops, like, we see this stuff all the time. And if you're just able to give yourself that love and grace, you can have these massive breakthroughs after the darkest forest. But damn, when you're in the dark forest, you have no idea that it's even possible.
Well, it's so hard to bet on yourself when you're in the middle of the dark forest. And I feel like whenever you go to like marathon breakdowns at like the New York City Marathon, for example, which we're going to talk about coming up, it's like, I feel like you hear these stories of athletes going through the dark forest, not because it's like these like beautiful triumph stories. It's because it's almost ubiquitous in some sense. I mean, maybe not what Bailey went through was pretty extreme, but it's like, I feel like we see it across the board with athletes and it's so hard to find that power to keep going.
Yeah. And especially like these types of unexplained health issues.
Yes. Yeah.
We are seeing so much more than we used to see in coaching.
Yeah. I think that might be like in part due to COVID.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe with Bailey, this was some sort of situation of long COVID. Like she was sick, like, you know, had what seemed like very much like a COVID infection and then had this long period of time where she struggled.
Yeah. And after seeing how COVID fucked me up and still I see it in my numbers.
Yeah.
My resting heart rate is still not equalized. Even though I'll have low days, my average is not anywhere near where it was, which makes sense because that's what the science says too. COVID is a fucker. Even if you haven't tested positive, know that the subclinical infections can sometimes be the worst for long COVID. So if you're going through something right now, we are here for support. You can contact us if you have any questions about like things we've seen or whatever. But know that if you can just put one foot in front of the other, keep believing, there's a chance that the brightest things are ahead, even though when you're in it, it's really hard to even have any concept of that.
Oh, for sure. The Dark Forest is like the longest ultra marathon ever.
Yeah. So one day at a time, keep that hope up and follow Bailey for tons of inspiration. I think no matter what your goals are in life, what she did this weekend will go down in trail history.
Oh, we just love Bailey.
She's the best.
She's the best.
We call her Aunt Bailey because she's been there along for the ride with baby Leo. Okay. Before we get into the iron study, a cool talk about something that got said in by a listener. I haven't even told you about it yet.
Oh, I'm so excited. Also a little nervous.
Yeah. No.
When you bring that up, I'm like, where are we going?
It was a time-lapse image of their HRV after they started taking Athletic Greens.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
And it was so it went up on average from 82 to 117.
What?
Over the course of 6 months. And they had 6 years of data.
Wait, that's bananas.
Isn't it bananas?
That's like wild. That's like beyond bananas. That's like mangoes.
Yeah. That's Reese's Cups.
Yeah.
That's menthol Pepto-Bismol.
That's gummy worms.
And what I thought was fascinating about it is that I think that what we're seeing in Athletic Greens is that there probably are individual genetics and profiles that get an HRV response from it. But even people that don't get those responses do get benefits because of the adaptogens and micronutrients. And seeing just how much Athletic Greens ingredients make a difference in adaptation and recovery for people, we are so sold. So drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. There you get a bunch of bonuses, vitamin D. Use that and you also support the podcast and you might see really cool patterns in your data.
And I'm even more sold after talking to their science team because we've been having like long conversations with them. And I actually messaged them recently because, you know, I've had this autoimmune stuff going on and I was like, should I be taking something that like might interact with my immune system? And they broke down the science for me. They like, you know, sent us journal articles. It was incredible.
And they thought through all these questions.
Yes.
Already.
Yeah. And they already thought about all this. And yeah, the answer was yes. And so I've been crushing the Athletic Greens and it's great.
And you've told me, I feel so good after this every single time because you had to go off during pregnancy. You didn't have to, but we don't.
And then I was breastfeeding, so I didn't I didn't have it for a long time. And then when it came back, I was like, it's health. I'm restored.
You are so restored. So drinkag1.com/swap. Okay, on to a cool iron study. This is a pretty quick one before we get to some news stories that I really want to talk about. But it's called Iron Absorption in Highly Trained Male Runners. Does it matter when and where you eat your iron?
And when I first saw this journal article title, I was like, eat your iron.
Eat your iron.
Because I feel like, I mean, I would say like 75% of our female athletes are on iron supplementation, guided generally by their doctor.
What would you say on male athletes, guess?
Probably like 60%, honestly. And so when I just think about swallowing iron, I don't think about eating iron. But this study, it was actually done looking at iron intake in food.
So the structure was really interesting. It was on 18 male athletes and they did three exercise trials. Sea level, they took the iron before exercise. Sea level, they took the iron after exercise. And altitude, they took the iron before exercise. What's interesting is I didn't see an altitude after exercise trial there.
Yeah, I don't know why they did that.
It might have been just the limitations of the study. They had to do an altitude training camp, a 7 days. So it got a little complicated, I think.
And the way how they structured the study was they did two 60-minute treadmill running trials. And this is at somewhat lower intensity, so 65% of VO2 max, which is like a pretty straightforward, easy run. And then they randomized pre and post exercise test meals, which they had labeled with 4 milligrams of iron. And they had athletes consume them either 30 minutes before exercise or 30 minutes after exercise. And what I thought was curious was 4 milligrams of iron compared to an iron supplement is pretty darn low. So like Nature's Made iron is 65 milligrams of iron. So again, not a ton of iron, but interesting to see how athletes are absorbing this.
And it's probably easier to measure exactly how they're absorbing it in
these
settings.
Yes, it's labeled iron. Yes.
So a couple interesting findings. Hepcidin, which can buffer against iron absorption, concentrations at altitude were lower at rest in 3 hours post-exercise compared to near sea level. So in other words, your body wants to absorb more iron when you're at altitude, it seems.
Which makes a ton of sense.
This finding.
Yeah.
And then pre- and post-exercise iron absorption at sea level is comparable when consumed within 30 minutes of exercise. So good finding. What we've generally been saying to athletes is after exercise is a great window to take your iron because you don't have to worry about stomach issues. The body's ready to absorb it. Then a couple studies have come out recently saying that's a good time, despite past thinking that maybe inflammation was high and it would reduce iron absorption.
The other thing we tell athletes too is generally stop iron supplementation like 3 to 4 days before a big race.
Yeah.
Like I feel like sometimes it can bother the GI system and it's just not worth taking any risks and you're not going to lose any like long-term performance gains from missing 3 to 4 days of supplementation pre-race.
Well, maybe this explains it, Megan.
Did you take iron before your race?
Not the day before, but that week I took it pretty heavily because I was like, I need to get my iron levels up.
You were just slurping iron pills with your Olipop soda.
I was eating my iron.
You were so slurping hard. We should change this study title. What happens when you slurp your iron?
So, I mean, that is actually a really good lesson. And a lot of listeners have been sending in their blood profiles and things like that. And what we're seeing, so many athletes should be supplementing iron, but aren't because they're falling in within ranges that, you know, might be considered normal, but aren't really. And so you can always send your numbers in, especially via Patreon, actually. And Patreon, I feel like it's a good way for us to give a little bit of advice. So patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P. Send messages there anytime. We do weekly posts that are listener Q&As, which are essentially like articles, and a weekly bonus podcast on questions from listeners.
Well, you've been crushing the Patreon. I've seen some of your responses, and it's like, well, this is not medical advice, but this is what I would do.
That's how I try to flame and I'm like, I don't know if this would protect me in a legal setting if I'm wrong, but here's what I would do, or here's what an athlete I coach would do in this setting. But we're doing that with iron panels and blood panels and things, just because so many people are rudderless, like living in, I don't know, like where I grew up, where there's not a doctor that understands this field and they just want someone to give them some feedback. So we can help give you that there.
And in the process, we're learning a ton too.
Because so
our Patreon listeners are so smart. It's like continuing education right there on a Patreon platform. But actually one other thing that I wanted to highlight from the study actually was they found that pre-exercise iron absorption increased 2.6 fold at altitude compared to sea level. And the theory is that's likely due to the increased need for enhanced red blood cell production and maintaining your iron stores.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was really fascinating because like if you're at altitude, extra important to supplement iron and probably extra important to think about the timing of how you're doing that and the substrate that you're giving your body to.
Yeah. And that's where it gets complicated is all of these questions have individual responses, probably tied to things like genetics.
Yes. Also, these are male athletes.
Yeah.
You know, who knows for female athletes, like this was 18 athletes. I'm sure there's wild individual variation. So
yeah. And whenever your body wants to produce red blood cells, whether that's altitude or whether you're in heat or training really hard, whether you're in heat, sounds like I'm talking about humans like they're dogs.
Or whether you're in our hot tub, just chugging Pepto-Bismol, getting your heat training in.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of the things that frustrates me the most. When my stomach goes through that, I'm just thinking about, oh, this is probably hurting my absorption and probably my iron levels because of not being productive for my stomach. That's GI issues are another factor that plays a role.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
But on substrate, we've gotten a few emails from listeners on something we talked about like 6 months ago called liposomal iron.
Which is fascinating from a chemical breakdown. So liposomal iron, like the key strategy there is what they do is they surround iron in the liposome, which is like a structure made of lipids. And the theory is that it protects iron from interacting with things that limit absorption. So things like calcium or magnesium, which like limit iron absorption, can hopefully be protected in this liposomal form.
And the weird part about these emails, one listener had chronically low ferritin, like 12 to 13, even with lots of supplements. They went up to 90. So probably there are people that liposomal iron could be the solution for, and it might be tied to the types of people that don't absorb it well for whatever reason. Maybe it's their gut.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're one of those people who's never gotten your numbers up, even with supplementation, consider this form. I actually think maybe even we should experiment with it to get some of our own information so we're not just winging it on, you know, like I think it helps to know how it feels, like if there are any stomach issues or things like that. So pay attention to this world.
That would be amazing. Your swap's guinea pig.
Yes.
You're a guinea pig for slurping iron.
Yeah. I thought you called me the swap skinny pig.
Oh,
and you're like, no, man, I'm the thick pig. Yeah. That is what I want you to call me, not just here, but in bed.
Thick pig.
That's my shirt. I need a name tag. This is the thick pig. Deal?
Deal. Okay. 100% deal. That is amazing.
Does it turn you on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not as much as sour gummy worms.
Okay. Dude, don't say sour gummy worms turn you on. I'm going to think I'm not the right guy for you. I'm not the right thick pig.
You are the right thick pig.
Okay.
I promise.
Thank you. All right. Some news and thoughts. This is my favorite part of every episode is when we talk about random shit.
Also, there's controversy in here too.
Yo. So
yeah,
fun.
I know. We should just have controversy in every episode. I love it.
Before getting to the controversy, wanted to talk about the crop top love challenge, I think is what we're going to call it. So we teased this on a previous episode. Now is the official announcement. If you want a free crop top, we're going to give away probably a little more than 5.
Yes.
Maybe even 8.
We always start with like a number and then we're like, it's free for all.
No, not for all, because these do cost $60 a piece. And they are very expensive for us too. So send an email or a Patreon message ideally saying that you want to try a crop top. And this is for people that have always been uncertain about this. You know, the swap message is that your body is fucking perfect and we want to celebrate it. And if a crop top helps you with that, but you're uncertain and don't want to purchase it, send it to us. Then if you don't like it, we just ask that you mail it to another address we're going to give you afterward.
Yeah, it's going to be the traveling crop top situation. It'd be great.
Yeah, perfect.
I was going to go sisterhood of traveling crop top, but yeah, I didn't want to gender it. Like it last time. Yes.
Yeah, and this can be for men too. You know, if you're a man out there that wants to try this, even though I think they're women's cuts, but at the same time, it probably size-wise, we can figure it out.
Well, you can dream big and you can also attach a heart rate monitor to it if you're a male.
That's true.
Yes, because a sports bra for me is always where I like safety pin my heart rate monitor. Maybe you just need a crop top.
Normalize crop tops for everyone.
Yes.
And as always, the message. Oh yeah.
Maybe you would have won the race if you had a crop top.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Actually, you want to hear the most embarrassing thing of all from the race?
What? I don't think I've heard this yet.
This is so shameful that I almost didn't want to bring it up to you or the podcast listeners.
No shame here.
Okay. So
unless it's Reese's Cup related.
I got dressed in the dark
and
I chose a pair of shorts that are older. For some reason, I didn't choose my Jonji shorts. I don't know why. Something got into me. And in the process, they had been used a lot, and they had a hole where the like built-in underwear should be.
Oh man.
And I didn't realize until we got to like mile three. And so, and they're short. And so I was running, and every time we went past children, I had to put my hand over my whole situation down there.
Yeah.
And I probably flashed like 15 people.
Well, did you chafe?
Did I chafe? No, I didn't chafe, Megan, but I really...
Okay, well, this is not a problem. If you were flashing people and didn't chafe, we're all good.
Megan, there's something about it, like, as much as I'm about body positivity...
Yeah, yeah.
When your scrotum is flapping in the wind, there's a big problem
there. We are not about scrotum positivity.
No. That's actually the one place where I draw the line with body positivity. Positivity with literally everything, except... the ball sack.
Yeah. Well, you did have a dream the other night that I was doing a comedy special naked. So
I did.
You might have different feelings about my body.
Tom Cruise and Harrison Ford were at your comedy special. It was your debut comedy thing, and it was going to be on Netflix. And they were obsessed like I was.
And you told me this at 2 a.m. Like, you just woke me up to tell me this.
Which it was the most vivid thing I've ever experienced.
It was great. And I was like so honored. And then I had great dreams about Tom Cruise all night. And then I realized he was older than my dad when I woke up.
Tom Cruise, he's remarkable. He does his own... own stunts and everything.
But you know, it was amazing. I didn't change my thoughts.
Yeah, it didn't change.
Yeah. I still wanted to bang him.
Bang Tom Cruise?
Yeah. Oh, you want to bang Tom Cruise?
No. He's problematic, Megan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's okay.
Why is he problematic?
There's the whole Scientology thing.
Oh, which, true.
And it's like manipulative Scientology.
Yeah,
so
yeah. We're on sexy. If you're not on our sexy science game, we're not banging. I didn't know. I knew about Scientology, but I didn't like actually fully process
it. We should
watch
some documentaries on
it. Okay, yeah.
But to give you some Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford, yes. In his 80s, definitely bangable.
Oh, true. Yeah.
So before an episode of Shrinking.
Shrinking's so good.
Our biggest recommendation. Watch Shrinking.
Best show ever.
And by the end of that season, you will be the happiest, most deliriously joyful person on earth.
I thought you were going to say you'd want to bang Harrison Ford.
Well, you will, but there's a scene in it where he's shaving and he's shirtless.
Yeah.
And I heard from creator Bill Lawrence that before the scene, Harrison Ford heard about it and, you know, in his really gruff way, he's like, okay, give me 20 minutes. Because he had to go do push-ups for 20 minutes to get
pumped.
Oh, that's
hilarious.
Before the thing.
That's a David Roach move. He did push-ups everywhere. Roach,
especially at 80. Yeah. So, hell yeah, Harrison Ford. Little iffy on Tom Cruise that do like his movies.
Thank you for informing me.
Okay, yes.
I'm kind of sad. I got really pumped that he saw me naked.
No, it's okay. He might try to indoctrinate you, so be careful. Okay, some thoughts on the New York City Marathon. Man, we were running long already, Megan. Yeah, just enjoying each other's company.
Okay, let's just do New York City Marathon and controversy, then we'll do hot takes.
No, I want to talk about Strava as a dating app.
Okay, sure. Okay.
So much to going on. Okay, so some thinking on the New York City Marathon. First, Helen O'Beery won. She's from here in Boulder, trains with On Running and Dathan Ritzenheim's crew. But I was so scared for everyone facing her before this race because Dathan talked about one of the workouts she did up on Magnolia Road.
Dathan is her coach, yeah.
Yes. 17 miles at 5:48 pace, which if you've ever run Magnolia Road, that is insane.
It is bananas and mangoes and Reese's Cup all in one. Like, I don't even know if, has a male athlete, do you think, even done that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Men have done it in super shoes more recently.
But like not commonly.
But until recently, that was only done by a few of the top runners at CU. And I had done it once.
17 at 5:48?
Yeah.
Actually, I guess you haven't thinking about that.
Well, 15.
Yeah.
But
you're approximating.
Before super shoes.
Yes. Yeah.
But the point being, like, she was going to be untouchable in this race. And the way the race unfolded, perhaps because people realized that, like, clearly if they release that workout, it's a mind game situation. Because everyone knows Mags. They know what this means. Is the women's race went out very easy.
Oh, it's a total tactical race. Yeah. With 10K to go, 11 of the 14 of the women in the elite field were still there.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that usually
very small elite field too.
Yeah, very small elite field. It usually doesn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that might've been deferring to O'Beery a little bit.
Yeah.
And sure enough, in the last mile, she laid down the hammer. Dropped
452 mile.
452 mile to finish uphill in Central Park. Just a wildly good athlete. One of the things I love about O'Beery that's really interesting, go watch her running form. It's unique. But one of the things she does is she leans forward slightly, especially when she's going up hills. That probably explains to me one of the reasons that she's so good on mags is we're the ultimate king and queen of slight forward lean on uphills. So if you don't try it, if you haven't tried it, try a slight forward lean on uphills. I think you're going to see your glutes become super powered and you go so much faster.
Well, if I can become like 1% more like Helen O'Beery, I'm going to be leaning so far forward. It's going to be great. But also Kellen Taylor and Molly Huddle were competing in New York City, coming back postpartum, and they both had great races.
Yeah.
And I feel like as a postpartum athlete, it was exciting to see them like throwing down out there.
Yeah, they did so great. So both were in the top 10. Both, there was something with them in Chicago, right? Chicago Marathon?
Oh, it's, yeah, this is controversy. Here we go. Okay. I guess Chicago didn't offer them elite spots on the starting line, but I actually think what they mean by that is they didn't offer them like strong enough appearance fees.
Okay.
So there's more to come on that story, but yeah, sponsor postpartum women. Get them out there.
Yeah, sponsor postpartum. It's amazing what athletes can do. We actually are... post on Patreon last week is about postpartum running and training, responding to a listener question who had a tough birth experience. So check that out. But our approach is like generally, you are ready. Like get clearance, but like there are some modes of thinking that are so antiquated about how quickly bodies can be ready after pregnancy. So you need to listen to your body, but also understand that like it's amazing what the human body can do.
It's amazing, but it's also like really fucking hard at the same time.
Megan, because, no. Yeah. Let me explain pregnancy.
I'm like, after having gone through that postpartum period, it's also really hard. So the fact that they're competing here at New York City, like I feel like bone stress injuries, bone density, like all kinds of complications postpartum. So it was so cool to see them like do smart training and get back out. So also same too with Rachel Snyder in the 5K. She got second just 6 months postpartum. And wow. I was like so inspired by
That's wild. I mean, that might be even too fast.
Yeah. Well, she was actually ripping like 200s at 38 weeks pregnant. And I remember watching that and being like, whoa.
And the point is just uplifting everyone's unique approach. Like some people will take a year to do their first run postpartum and that's great. And just know that these experiences are not universal. So cut yourself tons of slack, listen to your body, but also don't listen to people that are trying to scare you. Mm-hmm. Basically about anything, whether you're Bailey going through this unexplained sickness and people, doctors telling her, well, we're not sure what's going on. You might not come back to, you know, people postpartum being told, you need to wait 6 months to try your first run walk, which or whether, I've heard.
Yeah, or whether you're eating iron or slurping iron. It's all individualized.
Do you want to talk about the men's race at all? I kind of don't.
I actually want to talk. I think Cam Levins is an interesting story. So Cam Levins classically runs like 180-mile weeks. He does triples.
That's what went super viral before
this race.
Yeah, so like
3 to 4 days a week, he does triples.
Three runs in a day.
Yeah, which is like, when you think about that mileage adding up, and he's had like a pretty up and down career. Yeah. So he's been to the Olympics. He's been the Canadian record holder. He ran a 205 at Tokyo. But he dropped out pretty early in this race. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I just feel like that training is wild.
Yeah, it's interesting. The triples idea, because I can't understand the physiological rationale for it unless we're just uplifting miles as opposed to the adaptation stimulus.
Yeah, I agree.
Because like if the rationale for doubles primarily relies in a little bit of aerobic development, but not necessarily just that, more the response in the hormonal system and protein expression, mm-hmm. then why would three times give your body enough space to actually do these hormonal pulses? And I don't think it would, based on the time lapses I've seen of our diurnal hormonal like approaches and things. So I'm a little bit skeptical on things like triples. And until it gets proven more, I think someone like Cam Levins could be just as good with a slightly different approach.
Well, you're talking about hormonal pulses, and I'm thinking about like hormonal landslides. Like, yeah. I mean, I feel like just the challenge of overtraining. But there was this weird thought in my brain, and sorry, I'm just like prefacing this, and you can let me know where I'm going here, but I kind of didn't want him to succeed, which I feel like absolutely horrible person saying that, because like I want to uplift everyone.
And that's seems like a great guy.
He seems like a great guy.
And
that's
he works his ass off. He's the ultimate hard worker.
But the reason I didn't want him to succeed is because I don't want 180 mile weeks to succeed and just cause these hormonal landslides and athletes that are like, this works. This is what we need to do. We need to do triples.
Yeah.
What's your response to that? And me like,
No, I respect it. I think what works though.
Yeah.
And we need to, as much as we can, be open to new ideas.
Yeah.
I just don't want the new ideas to be the types of things that are only possible for a few people.
Yeah. Well, that's my point is like, I don't want us to like get to the point where 180 miles is like the new norm.
Yeah.
That scares the shit out of me.
That's why I get so excited by these studies in cycling in particular,
yeah.
where I've always expected that to be the best in the world, you have to be a full-time job and do it 35 hours a week, like some wild amount of training. And in practice, most of the studies that are on the top levels of stage racing show those athletes are at 18 hours a week, mm-hmm. which is still a ton, but totally reasonable. Like I could totally imagine an athlete doing that on the bike, where a lot of those are purely easy miles. So I think maybe the more is more approach has been tempered a lot in training theory. And there's still people pushing the limits that have a lot of success and it might work for them.
Yeah.
But I like to think more is more up to a point. Try to find that point without pushing past it, because past it, a lot of bad things can happen. And, you know, Cam, like the thing is, he probably just had a rough day for reasons independent of his training.
Yeah. I mean, he's had great marathons.
Like, I had a tough day at my little backyard half marathon, and it's not because of the training. It's because I just had a tough day, you know?
Yeah, we're not gonna change training. Granted, if you were doing triples, we probably would.
Okay, what do you want to talk about next? We can skip the Strava and push it back to next week. There was a really interesting article in Elle about Strava as a dating app, but we can wait.
Let's go to hot takes.
Okay, let's go to hot takes.
Hot takes, there's some good controversy in the hot takes, and we'll save the Strava and the US Olympic trials controversy for next week.
Yeah, and maybe more updates will happen about the Olympic trials, and maybe someone will be murdered because of Strava.
So, and we'll just continue saving the Reds consensus statement for another episode. Yeah.
Wait, can I ask you a question though on the Strava really quick?
Yes, sure.
Do you think Strava should have direct messaging capabilities?
I'm actually going to say from a place of personal perspective and then like global perspective. Personal perspective, no.
Okay.
I don't need another place to respond to direct messages. Yeah, I have messages coming in as an affront on many directions. I love them, but it's a lot. But I think from a global perspective, yeah, I think it would like really foster community.
Okay. I like it.
What do you think?
Oh, no direct messages in Strava. These people can comment and get things out.
Like, oh, yeah, but you can't be like creepy in a comment. You can't be like, hey, let's run.
I think you can.
Yeah, but I guess it's good.
But you go back to an older
There's
run.
A filter, yeah.
What you should do. Okay, here is the... Listen now for all of my people that want to date with Strava. You don't comment on new runs. You don't be creepy that way. You go back 6 months, find a run nobody's commented on, comment something about like really innocuous and kind, and see if they respond. If they don't respond, let that one float away, son.
I love that because it's like in the past, no one can see it.
Exactly.
Yeah, no one will know the creepiness that you're doing.
Yeah, and Strava, please do not allow direct messages. But we can talk about it more next week. But you know what I was thinking?
What?
The things that guys send on direct messages all too often are dick pics, right? Not good. But you know what I can send?
What?
A thick pig.
You should just like spam the internet with that.
Well, just to you. You're the only one who gets the thick pig.
You should spam my phone with that. Okay. I'd be so pumped.
Hot takes time. Do we have anything else to promote before we get to hot takes?
John G. Oh, we love John G. You should have worn John G shorts at your race. You would have won.
I have learned my lesson many times over. John G is the best. So John G at johng.com, use offer code SWAP, S-W-A-P. They make the best winter running gear. We just broke it out. It's been warm here in Boulder, but I cannot wait till Wednesday because I'm going to be able to go out in the cold weather and be nice and toasty in my beautiful, beautiful clothes.
Well, I got even more excited about your shipment than my shipment because like sometimes you go out there in like various clothing
states. I wear crotchless shorts to a running race. I get it. I need this.
And John G is making you whole and making you beautiful. They're making you a sexy thick pig and I'm very pumped about it.
Yeah. So John G is the best. Also the coolest company. We've decided to be a part of John G's journey long term. So we are going to be fully invested. This is one of those companies that we're like, we don't care if it shines back on us. We want this to be successful because of what it will mean for the broader community.
And actually, as we were making that leap, we shared John G's story with some of like our friends and family who are outside the running space. And their response was an overwhelming hell yes. You should be with that company long term, just like their mission and their sustainability.
Yeah. So go to johng.com, tell them we sent you. All right. On to hot takes. First one. Courtney DeWalter would win Ironman Kona or Tour de France Femmes with one season of specific training. The same is not true of any elite male runner, including Killian and Kipchoge.
Oh, hell yeah.
This is weird. No, I like this.
Do you agree? I agree 100%. No, I don't agree. It takes very specific training. But you know what? I want to believe in Courtney so hard. I believe she would win like all of Jeopardy and all of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and Tour de France and Tour de Femmes. Yeah.
The shorts aren't aerodynamic. So yeah, I don't think that's going to work. No, I think the
level, I mean, it takes a lot of specific training. Yeah.
And I think the level of sports, like we're starting to choose at the very, very, very top end for a specific frame, like not frame, body frame, but a specific like framework of development.
Yes.
That has to be unique to the individuals, right? Mm-hmm. Like Courtney is made to run. I don't think that she's just as good as she is because she's an aerobic monster. I think it's something much deeper than that that probably goes to everything. So I think that the top athletes at all of these sports are probably like, I would say it's much more likely that the winner of Ironman Kona would be able to come to running, like Heather Jackson, who has been podium there, than a runner would be able to go to those other sports.
I would say, though, that if we turn the clock back 20 years and had Courtney train for one of these races, I absolutely think she could win and be a contender. Okay. I just think it takes a long time to develop that specificity.
I like it. That's a hot take in return.
Yeah.
Okay, hot take number two. MRIs can be BS.
I like this one.
Yeah.
My answer is yeah. Actually, sometimes you can find incidental findings on MRIs that like are sometimes very unhelpful in the context of training. So I think it's always really important to think about when you're getting an MRI, like how useful is this? Is this needed? Like, have I taken 4 days off of rest or 7 days off of rest? And then I think the other thing too is like sometimes the reads on radiology reports can vary wildly by radiologists. So get a bunch of opinions.
Yeah. Sometimes I feed the reads or the actual images into ChatGPT now. ChatGPT is still pretty bad at this. Yeah. And it also says, I shouldn't be doing this. Why are you using me for this? And I'm like, do it, bitch.
And you're like, you went to Harvard Medical School. Tell me what I need to know.
I do give it those prompts. I'm the coach that really uplifts them. But I think the important point here, and it's some place I've kind of changed over time, is that my thinking on MRIs used to be, well, let's get the image because worst case scenario, we don't have to act on it.
Yeah.
And what I think I've seen over time is that there's a liminal space between uninjured and injured that athletes are in much more than MRIs give credit for, or much more that even the medical system sometimes does. That if we MRI'd someone's shin when it hurts a little bit, occasionally we would see a tibial stress reaction when, you know, a doctor would say 6 weeks off, when it might not actually need that. And we don't give enough space for what happens if you take 3 days off or a week off rather than taking 6 weeks off. So my thing is 3 days can save 3 months. Throw 3 days on any problem you have before you get an MRI, before you keep running on it, before you keep testing it. 3 days saves seasons.
I think for many injuries, you need an MRI to some extent.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that, like, don't deprive yourself of the MRI. But I also think it's important not to run right into the MRI machine. Like, if you go out, I've had some athletes, like, go out for a long run and then all of a sudden get an MRI. And it's like, wait, there's probably going to be incidental edema there. So, like, give yourself also the chance to rest to make sure there's not incidental findings coming up on there.
Yeah, and don't accept from any medical practitioner, this is the final thing, that MRIs are not BS. A diagnosis for your injury without an MRI?
Oh, yeah. I've seen some diagnoses of stress fractures with no imaging. I'm like,
no, you can't do that. It's like, maybe there are some cases where you're 50% sure, but the number of times, I mean, literally probably 90% of these cases will get an MRI and be clean. And it's wild at this point. And my go-to stock response is just, it's incredibly hard to diagnose any of these clinically.
Yes.
So you need an image. And what I want to say is, like, I think it's irresponsible, verging on a type of athletic malpractice, to tell someone they have a stress fracture without confirming via an image.
Oh, 100%. If you're seeing a practitioner that does that, you should be like, this is not okay.
Yeah, because they're not treating you like a professional athlete. And everyone is an elite athlete. So, like, if LeBron James is worried about something, he'll get that image. So even though you should be careful about MRIs because there's some non-binary space there. There's some space between zero healthy and one injured that athletes can occupy, and MRIs sometimes can't illuminate exactly where you are in that framework. It kind of just gives you one of those numbers. Even with that, we are huge MRI fans and think as soon as you've given something rest and it's still bothering you, hop in that machine.
And sometimes you need to advocate for yourself in a doctor to get an MRI and like go to bat for yourself because sometimes you need it.
What are up with doctors? My theory, doctors are actually like Gollum with the ring, Lord of the Rings. They're like, no, I'm not going to give you my MRI. This is my precious machine.
Well, I feel like, I mean, there's medical costs. There's incidental findings.
I just wanted to do a Gollum impression.
I want to talk back like Gollum. Your Gollum impression was way better than mine.
No. My Gollum impression at the end bordered on like, almost like a hate crime.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know if
whatever,
this is okay.
Whatever
yeah.
species Gollum is, I'm like, ah, I'm sorry. I greatly affirm all of my hunched over 4 foot brethren. Okay, number three. Anyone who trail runs should either learn or practice navigation with a paper map and compass. It's an essential life skill that could save lives if a phone dies.
I disagree with that. You can just take my advice. Which is I just like follow my like dream board of where I'm going. I don't look at a phone. I don't look at a map or a compass. I just like let myself wander.
Yeah, you decide which trail to take based on like a Ouija board.
Yeah, actually based on which might be a Strava segment. I'm like, right looks really well traveled. I should take it and send it.
Yeah, so you don't think people should know how to do paper?
No, they definitely should, obviously.
Wait, you think so? No way.
I mean, it's a good skill to have.
Megan, we're 2023 here.
I mean, when you go to a grocery store, you need to be able to tell people, like, go 3 lights down, make a right, make a left, like if they can't use their phone.
I would have no idea what to do with a compass.
Yeah, I'm totally kidding. But, I mean, no, Barclays?
Yeah, exactly. I got a lot of pushback on my Biggs take last week.
Oh, I'm sure.
I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was fine.
Well, I mean, I thought it was fine because I was countering you.
Yeah, but like that's our nature as we come to a conclusion at the end. But the I was a little bit frustrated. I was like, guys, come on.
Yeah.
You know, Biggs isn't the New York City Marathon, even if it's really cool and we uplift everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, that's fine. Yeah. I understand that. But back to compasses. I'm like, if you gave me a compass, I don't know what useful I could do with it. I think probably the only use I could ever get out of it is like sticking it up my butt.
Maybe, it depends on the type of shorts you're wearing. It probably wouldn't stay there.
Oh, or I have a really ease of access.
Yes, yeah.
That's one of my favorite defector posts every year, actually. So to end this episode where it started, defector does at the end of each year, what have we stuck in our butts in 2023? Which they go through the medical records and the ICD codes, I imagine.
Oh, it's a great part of being an emergency room doctor is you just get this like whole collection of x-rays of stuff up people's butts.
Yeah, and you know they have to take them out and everything like that. So they go through the entire US health system and find things. And so, you know, it starts with things that are kind of innocuous, like compasses. Like, yeah, many compasses have probably been picked up butts. I'm not joking here. And then it gets to wild things. We're talking picture frames. We're talking blinds. We're talking, I don't know, basically like
thick pigs.
Yeah, maybe I have some ideas there. Okay, on to Listener Corner. Do you have anything else we want to talk about before we get to Listener Corner?
No, just that was really fun.
I love you so much.
If you've gotten this far, thank you. We've had this has been a full journey, this episode.
I think every episode is a journey at this
point. That's true. I don't know why this one feels more like a journey than usual. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think maybe it's because I'm coming back to life after my stomach pain this
weekend.
That's
true. Yeah, so you're feeling empowered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're also both a little bit delirious from that terrible time jump.
Oh, no. I think it's been a journey, but it's been so much fun.
Okay, on the Listener Corner. This is from someone who crushed their Javelina 100. Thank you so much for all of your advice. We had emailed a lot back and forth as friends, and they're a podcast listener. Hopefully, I have some good pictures to share soon, but this weekend was incredible. The three complete rest days that I advised them to take... much like we just talked about, very topical, definitely did the trick. And I went into the race feeling super calm. My body held up really well, and I was able to finish in 23 hours, hitting my sub 24-hour stretch goal.
Oh, heck yeah.
And most importantly, I rocked the heck out of my cow costume with the swap hat holding the cow ears perfectly. I never thought I'd be happy about getting a stress fracture, but because of it, I got to do Javelina instead of the race I planned, and I had a freaking blast. My husband and daughter came too, and they loved it as well. Granted, the plane ride home last night was rough because we were all sleep deprived and overstimulated. Totally worth it though. That might explain this episode. This race perfectly captured everything I love about running in the community. Learning to be nicer to my body has been one of the greatest, most rewarding lessons. I'm definitely still learning that lesson too. I was extra proud of myself when I woke up this morning and felt zero urge to go for a long walk or do the elliptical to log some kind of workout for the day. Instead, I've been eating a full meal almost every hour all day, constantly repeating to myself, thank you, body, for letting me do this ridiculous stuff. I'm officially on team more food, more rest. Love you guys and all you do for this ridiculous sport.
Holy shit. I'm so proud of this listener for like embracing that kindness and more food and food doping. And it's so cool to see it pay off while in a cow costume.
Yeah.
Couldn't get any better.
Yeah. And what I love most about the more food thing in this context is I think sometimes we learn methods of depriving ourselves partially because like we don't truly like love and uplift ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, depriving yourself is almost like a form of punishment that gives you some sort of validation that at least I have control on this element.
Yes, some sort of dopamine in some way for people.
Definitely. Yeah. And even if it's not dopamine, it's like at least gives you some element of just like, I can do that. Even if I don't like myself, I can do that. And this listener getting to the point that like more food, more rest, love myself, find calmness. It's like, that is the coolest thing. And that's why we go on these running journeys. Like when we're talking about why we want you to do these local races, it's because by throwing yourself into that ringer, you're forcing yourself to confront some of these thoughts that might be able to just become a routine in the otherwise. Like, oh, well, if you're able to just skate through your training in life, not feeling your body well, maybe you'll never know or need to face. You're depriving yourself, you know? Meanwhile, this listener put themselves out there, went for it, got a stress fracture, and in that process realized, oh, fuck, something's wrong, and I need to reset. And they did that and then rocked Javelina in a cow costume. Hell yes.
Crushed it. I'm such a fan of Halloween that now I want to race Javelina because I just want to race in a costume.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be so fun?
Oh, dude, thick pig.
Oh, my gosh.
Tandem T-Rex.
That would be so fun.
For us.
They should have a tandem costume race at Javelina.
Oh my God, Megan.
Can you imagine how much you would want to kill me by a mile 100?
No. It's going to be awesome.
I'm just going to be back there like smacking gummy worms. Yeah.
No, you're going to be riding me like a horse.
Oh, I totally would
at
be.
At the Kentucky Derby. Because like you're a fatigue resistance monster. I'm still learning and I have big hopes and dreams and I'm not there yet. I'm going to be fading on the backstretch and you're going to be like, come on, Secretariat. You got this.
It's going to be like the kid with no arms and then we're just going to face plan at the finish.
I love you so much.
I love you. This was so fun.
And I love all of our listeners who are our precious.
Woohoo.
Huzzah.
We love you all.